Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Interesting to read, and Doc handed me this document. It's a look by the BBC at how European countries are tackling the pandemic. And funnily enough, Ireland, it says here, the highest level of restrictions in Europe. And they go on to point out full lockdown since the end of December, highest level of restrictions, level 5. People staying at home except for travel where work is concerned. No visitors allowed in private homes or gardens unless it's for the care of children. Weddings limited to 6 people, funerals to 10. All non-essential shops, gyms, pools, leisure facilities closed. Restaurants, pubs, cafes can provide takeaways and deliveries only. So there you go. So the toughest, that's according to the BBC, who have looked rather closely at most of the countries there. And Ireland coming out as the highest level of restrictions. So are you surprised at that? Or is it any surprise to you at all? All right, it's time for a Friday panel. And it's a panel with a difference today, because with the greatest of respect to all our usual panelists, it's a very young grouping we have today. We're joined by Dylan McLaughlin, who is a first year a student at Mary Eye and was a Leaving Cert student in 2020. Jason Quigley is with us, a Leaving Cert student 2021. He's from Nina. And Eimear Neville is a student council coordinator, Irish Second Level Students Union, and is a student at the Presentation Secondary in Clonmel. Good morning to you all, and thanks for coming on with us today. Can I go to you, Eimear, first of all, if you would? The latest that you're hearing about the Leaving Cert, what do you make of it all?
I think it's a historic win for Student Voice, if I'm honest. I mean, the Department of Education has proven to students that they will go to lengths to listen to their voices and find solutions that work for everyone. You know, the ISSU entered the discussions with nothing but pragmatic solutions. We surveyed our members and the wider student body, and the department proved to us that most of all, that they cared about our opinions and wanted to ensure that students got what they deserved, which was essentially a choice.
Right. So the situation that you have at the moment, which is that notion that a choice can be made between a traditional sitting of the Leaving Cert or that a look at the grades, the calculated grades. Are you happy with those running in tandem like that?
I'm more than happy. I mean, down to the wire, we did fight for what students want, and 81% of students did say they wanted a choice, because it's just not feasible to hold exams this year unless absolutely necessary. So students now have the choice. If they want to sit the exams, they can. It's no issue to them. And if they want to just study at home doing their online school or forever back at school and get their SEC accredited grades, they can also do that. So I think it is the perfect solution for students.
Jason, can I go to you on this? Since we last spoke, there is some more clarity on this, but of course it's not until next Tuesday and the next Cabinet meeting that we'll be hearing some more of the detail. Are you happy enough with what you've heard so far?
Morning, friend. Yeah, I'm absolutely delighted and thrilled with the news, but I'm still a bit apprehensive, you know, about the whole situation. You know, we've been through a torrid time, but look, we can all breathe a sigh of relief, I think, for the first time in, what now, 6 weeks has it been. Mm. But look, we're in our fifth month of remote learning, and, you know, despite the best efforts of schools and teachers, it's no match to the classroom tuition. But look, this more choice and flexibility in life, in light of the disruption, is better than we predicted. The option of a modified calculated grades and the sitting written exams in June, there will be greater equity and fairness to all students now. And students who have worked very hard will get their chance to prove themselves in the exam hall. And for those who struggle to engage with the online learning, I think it will not be unfairly penalised. So there will be finally fairness at play for all students. Now, the situation regarding to awards and projects, it's still ambiguous, I think, but hopefully, you know, clarity and lucidity will be given to us around this, hopefully now in the coming days.
Hopefully, for sure. And your choice will be what, Jason? Will it be calculated grades or will it be the traditional sit-down?
Brilliant question, friend. And I still don't know. I still have to, you know, decide and, you know, analyse all my choices. I presume now I probably will sit maybe a handful of subjects. You know, for some subjects I might know what predicted grade I'm getting, because I, you know, I've been doing fairly okay. But for other subjects, I might feel, you know, I need to just sit the exam. But sure, I've been saying this now for the last couple of days. I think, you know, the majority of Leaving Cert students should sit the exam. Like, you don't have to, but I'm just saying they should, because you have nothing to lose. Because even if you do sit that exam and do terribly in it, at least you have that, as I call it, an insurance policy where the predicted grade will back you up, and you could possibly even do better in that.
Right. And do you think you will know what your predicted grades are before the opportunity comes to sit the Leaving Cert?
Well, at the moment, we've been told by media and the department that we're not supposed to. I can see why they're doing it and why they want us to not receive it. So they, you know, they're trying to push us into doing the Leaving Cert. But, you know, hopefully that might be changed. You know, the unions and some opposition parties are kind of calling for that to be changed. Mm. So, you know, hopefully, you know, that fairness will be given to us.
And Jason, before I go to Dylan, my only difficulty with all of that is it not a totally different style of teaching that would be required for to calculate your grades, as opposed to students who choose to sit the Leaving Cert? I mean, one is one of revision, the other is active project work, I guess.
Yeah, indeed, friend. And look, we had the discussion last week about this, and, you know, the different kind of revision, as you said, learning. And, like, when we go back, it's going to be so interesting because, for instance, in my Irish class, if someone wants to calculate a grade, half of the class aren't going to do the oral work and half of the class will. So it's going to be this mixed match, and it will be confusing, but hopefully, you know, we'll take the minister's word for it. You know, everything will pan out, and hopefully, you know, things will get better.
All right. Jason, can I get your perspective? Because, of course, you had to put up with all of this last year when I suppose it was even newer. When you look at the difference between what you're hearing about what may happen this year and your experience, Dylan, what would you have to say to me?
Good morning, friend.
Good morning, Dylan.
First of all, I'm delighted that the students have gotten their choice. I know it's a very, very difficult situation they're in at the minute, but I can see serious issues straight away. Like, the algorithm that we had last year for our predicted grades did not work.
Yeah.
There was 16,000 results were either too high or too low. First of all, that needs to be sorted before they go any further. I'm worried as well about the bell curve and how that's going to work, the way they're going to mark their results. Like, because some of the predicted grades are going to be higher for people that that would have set the written exam. So that's a big issue that needs to be sorted as well. And I'd be very worried about the CAO points going up very, very high again.
Mm. And, Eimear, can I get you to pick up on some of Dylan's points there, because he has a unique perspective on this. That algorithm, and there wasn't a great deal of investigation into what was incorrect about last year so that we could make maybe more informed decisions this year. Do you have any of those worries?
I mean, those worries do exist in a lot of students' minds, but that's the great thing about knowing when we know. You know, we found out, was it on the 17th of February, and that gives up until May to figure out these issues, to find solutions to these issues, which I've no doubt the department and the advisory group will be doing.
Mm. And just to go back to Dylan on that for a moment, Dylan, what about what Eimear is saying? Would you have the same faith in the department as she has?
No.
No.
Straight out, no, friend. This should have been sorted since the day our Leaving Cert results were given out. There's no reason why they weren't working straight away on the class of 2021.
Right, by way of making preparation, I guess, is that
exactly,
it?
Exactly. The plan should have been done earlier, and I don't know if it's going to work perfectly, but hopefully it will for the class of 2021, because they deserve. They deserve the best chance at it, because they're worse off than we were last year. A lot worse off.
Jason, Dylan doesn't have as much faith in the department as you might have, and of course he's using his experience from last year on this. What do you make of that?
No, yeah, I completely agree with Dylan. Like, a plan B should have been in place months ago. Like, it's just another, you know, failure of the government, not the council at least. But look, about the grade inflation, I just want to make this point too. As grades will go up and predicted grades will be higher than your, you know, original result, the points will then also increase. So there might be this balance out, you know, of points and the fluctuation of the grade. So hopefully, you know, there will be an even balance of that. But coming back to your question of do I fit in the department? Look, we've experienced so many U-turns, I can't even, you know, count how many, but we just have to trust them. And hopefully things will iron out, and hopefully that the minister can get working at this new kind of approach to last year's predicted grades.
Eimear, you said to me there in passing about, you know, people listening to the voice of the students. I'd have some disagreement with you on that, because essentially this was down to negotiation between the unions and the department and the minister and thereby the government. But I didn't hear the voice of students, with the exception of people like yourselves on local media and the likes.
Well, you'll find that, like, well, of course, the Irish Second Level Students Union were in the discussions. We surveyed our members and we got over 25,000 responses. But there have been other students in media. To name a few, there is students from Limerick, Kildare, loads of them really. Like, it's not just students that are involved in union, it's everyday students as well. Because media do want to know what students have say, and they want to hear their opinion.
Yeah, and that's the media. But what about the powers that be? I mean, you know, did Norma Foley sit down with students, for example?
Norma Foley sat down with the student representatives. I mean, any students that were in the room with Norma were democratically elected by the students. So they acted on behalf of the students, and as the communications officer of the Irish Second Level Students Union, you know, we have hundreds of DMs coming into us every day, and we make note of everything that those students say to us to ensure that we know exactly what students need and exactly, like, what their biggest issues and their biggest worries are.
But Dylan, was that not just cosmetic in some way? You know, the photo op of sitting down with young people is grand and all very well, but then the real decision-making happens with the unions, the teachers and the department.
Well, I think the students got what they wanted this time around anyway, because their voice.
But we don't know the detail. We're really not sure of the detail of it yet, though.
That's the thing. That's the thing that I was going to mention next, because there was no even official announcement last week. There was Norma Foley was on the 6-1 News for about 5 minutes last week, and it just kind of left a kind of cliffhanger, I felt, that it was very broad what she said. There was no detail given to the students.
And of course, you know, if there's a bump in the road along the way and the like, we don't know what's going to happen then. Just Eimear, where your union is concerned, what about the young people out there who might have underlying conditions and might have concerns about going back to school in the first place? How do you feel about that?
Students with underlying conditions have been facilitated by the Department of Education to continue their studies at home. That is something that has been happening with since September. It's something that I think a lot of people have ignored. The media have definitely ignored it, because it is something that they should be reporting on, because a lot of young people don't know that facility is available to them. But if you have an underlying condition, you are allowed to stay at home and study.
Right, but does that not immediately put them at a disadvantage, because they mightn't have broadband in the fashion that would be good enough, and it requires a different kind of ability to study at home, I'm sure you would agree.
It does, definitely, and there is quite visibly a massive digital divide, and that has become very clear to us over the last 2 years, and I know that it is something that us as a union are working on, and also why having a choice is such a great thing, because if you don't have the broadband to study, you have the choice whether you want to sit your exams or to get predicted grading, or as they're calling it, SEC.
Right, but if you have an underlying condition and you have an issue with connectivity, well, you're at sea, aren't you?
In a way, yes. I know most schools have been very, very good in facilitating different options for students, whether they're getting sent homework, having phone calls with students, different options like that. It does depend on where you go to school and how willing they are to facilitate it, but the options are there and you do have the option to study from home.
Jason, can I go to you on the other subject? Because, you know, a lot of people would see people your age as being a snowflake generation, lacking in resilience, you know, glued to your screens all of the time, not hugely actively within your communities, all of that kind of thing. Is there any of that critique that's fair?
Look, I think it's important maybe just to analyse this term maybe snowflake generation, because we do have a lot of mixed views about this. What does it actually mean? And I have it here in black and white in front of me, and it refers to the young adults of the 2010s viewed as being less resilient and more prone to taking offence than previous generations. Look, Fran, I hate this term, and look, it needs to be called something else. And I do understand why it's called snowflake generation, because we are seen to be maybe more sensitive than other generations, but referring a cohort of young people just because we were born in this decade is wrong. And there is a level of degree of which I do accept. Nowadays, we have to be so careful in what we say or post, in what we do or make. And unfortunately, and this is what really bothers me, is that free speech, in a way, is kind of slowly disappearing from this generation. I think snowflake generation has a lot to do with social class and, you know, how parents raise their children. You know, if children are going to be spoon-fed with wealth and opportunity, they're going to be more likely to give out about things. And people from a poorer background are most likely to accept things and just get on with life. But, you know, the whole term snowflake generation, it's annoying for me when I'm being referred to it, because I don't consider myself a snowflake. I consider myself, you know, a young man who is able to, you know, take things on.
And do you see yourself, Jason, as being resilient, for example?
Well, look, we have to look at the world in which we're living in. It's, you know, forever changing. You know, we're in the, you know, digital age of things. And I would see myself as being strong and hardy, if you would say that. But, you know, some people are more sensitive. And, you know, that's okay, too. I think everyone has their own ways of dealing with things. But there is extremes of, you know, people who go too far. And maybe those people need to be brought down a peg or two.
Yeah, you make a very interesting point. I hadn't thought about that socio-economic dimension to calling a whole generation a snowflake. It's very interesting. Dylan, what about that? Are you insulted by the term?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Jason said. Like, in fairness, we've had it easy compared to some generations, that we have so many opportunities in Ireland today with third-level education and apprenticeships, and even second level and primary school education. We've all that, but there's something that we had to deal with that no other generation had to deal with, and that's the social media age. Like, from a very young age, you're engrossed in social media, and there's no other way out of it. You're there, and it's part of your life, and it's there kind of forever. And there's kind of, once you go through primary school into secondary school, there's kind of a constant pressure there to keep up with everything, and you're constantly comparing yourself to other people until you get to a certain age and you're kind of more mature. But it's difficult being a young person now, and even with COVID it's very difficult as well, because we're not seeing our friends, we're not seeing our family, and the days are hard. Some days are harder than the others, but the only option we have is to keep going. And you're talking to Jason about being resilient. Like, I think young people today are resilient. I'm just going to talk about myself. Like, we've gotten through the last year. The stress levels that was caused the last year because of everything that has happened. But we've gotten through it. Like, we're working every day as hard as we can. There's nothing else we can do. The only way is forward. There's no point of giving up, because there's light at the end of this tunnel. We're nearly there. Like, as the Irish Shannock goes, Níl an aonar dhoth scá. So everything will come to an end eventually.
Emer, that's very interesting that, you know, unlike other generations, you've had the whole dimension of social media there. As a young woman dealing with that, would you give me your perspective on the snowflake generation, particularly where social media is concerned?
Well, if I'm going to be honest, the term does really annoy me, like Jason said. I think the whole argument surrounding young people being snowflakes is that they are generally too politically correct. However, what I would say to that is, if you can be more kind and accepting of others, why wouldn't you be? It all boils down to respecting others and respecting people's identities in an already complex world. I think in terms of being a young woman online, you'd see issues such as the image-based sharing issue, IBSA, which is when, like, young women had their photos leaked online and in Discord servers. Obviously, it's not exclusive to young women, but it is predominantly young women that are facing that, and that would never have happened had it not been because of social media. I think a lot of young women face a lot of backlash online simply for saying that they are feminists or that they believe in feminism. And I think it all boils down to being called snowflake generation because, you know, young people say that they believe in equality and that they want to respect people, whether it's respecting pronouns, gender identities, stuff like that. And then they're called snowflakes online simply for having respect and for respecting others' feelings and identities. Like, it's not difficult. And it genuinely makes the world a little bit of a better place when we just have respect for each other and we use kindness. So I think that's the whole solution to this, is just kindness and respect.
Yeah, Jason, I must say, as a parent, I think my kids have a much better quality of life and an easier life than I had, and than, say, the people I would have grown up with would have had. I mean, would you accept that, for example, you know, in terms of, I don't know, like monies being available, you know, phones being available to them, taken for granted that there will be third level education, all of these kind of things?
Oh, yeah, I completely agree with you, friend. Like, you know, this new cohort of generation coming in is, you know, is more valuable and are getting more things, you know, a place in front of them. You know, as I said, you know, a higher proportion of people who are wealthier don't have to work for things. Their parents give it to them, you know, and maybe we are losing that bit of respect for people, you know, that bit of, you know, cop on. And, you know, that respect that so many people need nowadays is maybe slowly losing because people are, you know, a bit more selfish, a bit more arrogant and, you know, think that they know this world inside and out and know how to run things. Maybe, you know, young people are, you know, brilliant activist speakers like Emer. I know her from Corla in South Tiff. And as you said, you know, your own kids, look, they have a better quality of life, but... Is that their fault? Is that your fault? It's no one's fault.
No, absolutely not. But there are other dimensions to the life that we didn't have and other pressures. And I mean, Dylan brought up the whole business of social media, and that's certainly a pressure that we didn't have at all. Dylan, what about that? I mean, you're in first year in Mary Eye. You know, and again, I don't want to sound here like an old so-and-so that's saying, oh, back in my day. But the expectation that you'll go on to college, I mean, we never had that. There was no expectation of going to college or anything like that. You'd be lucky if you got past the Leaving Cert.
Oh, totally agree. I look, I'll take my own parents. Mum and Dad went to England when they were 17. Like, yeah. There was nothing here for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Straight on the plane over. Mum began working in the bank and Dad was on a building site. Straight away, there was no opportunity. Now we have the opportunities and we're very grateful for the opportunity. It could be a lot worse, but... At least the opportunities are there, and we have the option of going to college now.
Of course, and making the best of that, I suppose, and I wish you could enjoy it in the way that you should, as well, Dylan. Listen, will you all three stay with me for a moment? I must take a break. We'll be right back.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
Now, our Friday panel of young people still with me. Emer Neville, Jason Quigley, and Dylan McLaughlin. Now, Michael O'Doherty said to us this week that he is expecting an avalanche of mental health problems, particularly with young people post-COVID because of the emotional and the mental implications of the pandemic. Emer, can I talk to you about this, about mental health and young people indeed? Your feelings on that would be what?
I think he's absolutely right. I think if anything, if Ireland is leaving anything out of this pandemic, it is a immense, like, huge group of young people that have developed mental health issues because of this. I think something that particularly stands out to me is Jigsaw and Tipperary delaying their opening again. Jason mentioned there earlier that, you know, we were both on Tipperary, Corla and Oak, and this is something Corla and Oak has been working for I'd say maybe 10 years, and then to have it and then for them to delay it for what is the second time, it's very disappointing to see, because it really makes you think, are the government really putting in this effort to provide young people with the mental health facilities they need? Because there are next to no services for young people, and the ones that are there are full up, because so many young people have been affected drastically by this pandemic. and they don't have the support in place for them.
Could I get you just to move your phone a little bit, Eimear? You're just gone a little bit dull sounding on me. It just might be where you have your phone. Jason, what about this, where mental health issues are concerned with young people? Is this a term worth throwing around too much, do you think?
Oh, no, I don't agree with that now, Fran. I think it's not only young people. We have middle-aged people, old people, suffering in these, you know, horrendous times that we're in. And, you know, young people are at a disadvantage. You know, this is supposed to be the prime of our life, you know. We're missing out on so much, you know. I doubt that our Debs will go ahead this year, you know.
Yeah.
Hopefully college life will, you know, resume in September. But, you know, young people, we have all been through a tough and awful situation this year, but let's hope that these, you know, mental health facilities do reopen. We have Jigsaw planned in Thurles, so hopefully that can commence in the coming months. But look, I think that these restrictions are having an extremely heavy burden on people. Even the 5K restriction, you know, like we can only do a 5K cycle or run. Even extending that to maybe 10K would do so much to people. But look, we've been through so much and we can only do the best that we can.
Dylan, I have quite a bit of experience, sadly, of mental health issues and the like. So it concerns me that people speak about loneliness and they speak about isolation and they speak about frustration and anger and all of that. And they kind of call that mental health issues. But does it not take from people who suffer profoundly with the darkest of mental health issues? And that's my only concern about the way we're throwing this term around.
Yeah, I agree. It's such a broad kind of spectrum, Fran. It's very broad and it's very complex as well. But yeah, I agree with what Jason was saying there. It's been very hard on everyone the last year. Like everything we've missed out on and everything that has happened the last year. But for me, I think the key is exercise.
Do you?
I think it's what keeps me sane, to be honest with you, Fran. I'm up early, I start the lectures, I take the break and I go out for my run. And it just clears my head, get my bit of music going.
Right. And your lectures are at home now, aren't they, Dylan? It's online, is it?
It's all online.
All online, right. So you exercise early in the morning.
I get up and I do my bit of exercise, I go for my run, and then I might come in and back into the lectures then and do something else in the evening. I'm coaching a group of athletes at the minute over Zoom. I'm doing strength and conditioning exercises and sessions with them, a group I would have trained with before lockdown over Zoom. It's just kind of keeping everyone together and keeping people exercising, keeping people moving. I really think it's the key.
Right. Eimear, what do you make of that?
I think exercise, yeah, it's a great solution for those that are interested in it, but there are still amounts of people that have no interest in exercise. Like, I know particularly myself, I love theatre and I went to a theatre school in Clonmel, the Academy of Performing Arts, but I haven't been able to step foot in that school since COVID and since all the schools had to close.
Right, and that was your time for yourself and that was your passion, obviously.
Yeah, it's how I would have taken a break from school and my studies, and it's where I felt happiest. So I think all good, you know, having exercise, but you also need to facilitate the young people that don't do it, or that mightn't just engage with that as well. Like, open the theatre schools, open the gyms, give young people that access to the facilities that they need to keep sane during this pandemic and during this lockdown.
Jason, what about that where you're concerned? I mean, is exercise important to you, or have you something else that you look to?
Yeah, friend, like Dylan said, you know, I try to keep walking and running, you know, try to keep going every day. I miss the hurling so much.
It's
just unbearable. Like, I just want to come back. You know, as well, like, you know, I do singing and acting classes in Nina. I miss that too. And I think all our desirable things in life have just been taken away from us. And that's the worst thing, because we know it's still out there and it will all come back, but it's just a waiting game.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel extremely sorry for all of the Leaving Cert students, but Dylan, I particularly feel sorry for you, because that first year of college is such a rite of passage. It's such an important time, you know? And I mean, okay, you're doing it online, but the whole social aspect of it, the camaraderie, all of that you're missing out on.
Yeah, it's tough. And even the personal kind of development, making new friends. And getting life experience and kind of growing up in yourself as a person, like, and all the things you'd have to deal with in college. And you're still at home, like, you're still stuck at home, and there's no sign of us going back down anytime soon either.
Yeah, Emer, one of our listeners says, if they have such a problem with social media, why the hell don't they just stay away from it? What would you have to say to that listener?
I think, you know what, there is a load of young people that aren't on social media, but right now it's the only thing we have to connect with each other. You know, I've got families overseas, I can only talk to them through social media. I can't see my friends at school and I can't meet up with them because of the pandemic, so I can only talk to them through social media. It's the only thing we have right now connecting everybody.
Right, but you do admit that there is a very dark side to it, but you're saying that it still is your way of communication.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It can be absolutely horrible, but it's also one of our biggest assets is society, and it's the only thing that connects each and every person around the world at the moment. Those that can't leave, people seeing their grandparents if they haven't seen them since the pandemic started, they need social media to connect with each other.
Jason, is that even a thought that would cross somebody's mind of your age? You know, the hell with this social media, I'm opting out. Would that even cross your mind?
Well, just answering that listener there, why should we give it up? You know, social media and the internet is now part of our life. It's not about giving it up. It's how we live with it, how we protect people, how we, you know, balance out hate crime. Even poor James McLean, like, look at the abuse he's been getting for the last 9 years. You know, we need to set up, you know, proper schemes and protecting people online. It's not about running away from the solution. It's how we adapt and live with it. You know, social media and the internet has exploded in the last 10 years. We're still learning about it, of course, every day. Yeah. But it's just how we adapt to it.
Yeah, but Dylan, when you hear, as I heard yesterday, which blew me away, the one of these companies, you know, it has a bigger output of money than South Africa, for example, you know, in terms of the economy of South Africa. That's incredible to think that a company has that much power.
That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. That's mad. It just shows the power these companies do have, and they could be nearly exploiting it.
Yeah. And then, following on from what you're saying to me, take on board then what the listener is saying. If you have issues with it, why don't you just walk away from it?
I think that's a ridiculous statement from the listener. We're all locked up. We've no way, other way of communicating with our friends and our family. We're hardly going to start sending carrier pigeons around the place, sending out letters to people. Like, how else are we supposed to talk?
The way the broadband is around me, I'd be better off with a carrier pigeon. I can tell you, but
I'm sorry now, but I don't agree with that person at all. I've my uncle and my auntie and my cousins in England. I haven't seen them over here. All we can do is Zoom, and even my friends that live 10, 20 kilometres away, I can't see them either. So. Our only option is to be on social media talking to them. I know there's a lot of issues with social media, but it's kind of an essential part of our lives, to be honest.
Right, and it's there now, and there's no putting the genie back in the bottle. Like, listen, it was such a pleasure to have all three of you on today. You were marvellous on the programme, on the panel. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks a million.
We wish you well in your future as well. Emer Neville there, Jason Quigley, and Dylan McLaughlin. That's it for me for today. Thanks to Doc, who produced. And Stephen's on the way with the Time Tunnel. I'll talk to you on Monday. Have a nice weekend, won't you? Bye-bye.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.